London Column. This is Peter Watson once again presenting a weekly radio digest of items headlined or modest, but all selected for your interest and entertainment from the worldwide services of the BBC. London Column. Today, London Column stands squarely on one theme, a simple one and sincere. Britain says thank you. There's not one inhabitant of the British Isles who doesn't recognize the depth of our indebtedness, not merely as a nation, but as millions of individuals, to those countless friends, unseen and mostly unknown to us, who during the past 10 years have showered their overwhelming generosity on us with gifts of food and clothing. From the United States of America in particular, and from our own kinsmen all over the world, some £80 million worth of gifts, and we've long wondered how we could give some tangible proof of our gratitude. And now we can, because on the initiative of the Lord Mayor of London, a fund has been opened for nationwide subscription towards a permanent and practical expression of thanks. In a broadcast, the Lord Mayor told Britain just what it's intended to do.
I am proposing to raise a large sum of money which will be used for the benefit of students, men and women, from the Commonwealth overseas and from the United States of America. These students are coming to this country are the sons and daughters of those who have been so generous to us. What finer means of expressing our thanks could there be than to create a permanent and visible memorial in the form of noble buildings in London to house and care for these students and to enable them to share our national life under congenial conditions.
And the Lord Mayor's Thanksgiving Fund was launched with an official dinner at London's ancient Guildhall. The Guildhall and a distinguished company included as the Lord Mayor's principal guest of honour, the Princess Elizabeth, who, as a wife and a mother, could strike a personal note.
No one in this historic Guildhall, nor indeed in the whole country, has better cause than I to speak with real depth of feeling for the project just outlined by the Lord Mayor. From all parts of the Commonwealth and from the United States of America, very great quantities of food amounting to over £2 million weight was sent to me as gifts on the occasion of my marriage. And I had the great happiness of distributing the remarkable number of over 140,000 food parcels made up from them.
And Mr. Churchill, who guided the nation's course during those years when these gifts were on their flood tide, reminded us that they had another value, even greater than the £80 million they had cost our friends.
The money has been spent. The parcels have arrived. The food has been eaten. The clothes have been worn out. The dangers of those days are replaced by others. But the memory will remain with us while we live. And we are determined here tonight to set up a monument in the form of a living institution which will not only proclaim to future generations our gratitude, but which will stir into self-reviving life the forces of brotherhood and nobility which united us then and will grow stronger as the centuries roll by.
The Lord Mayor of London's plan may go some way towards discharging one kind of debt, but still the flow runs Europewards, because as part of America's aid to Britain under the North Atlantic Pact, four B-29 superforts already bearing the insignia of the Royal Air Force flew from Andrews Field, Washington to Marham in Norfolk. To welcome planes and men, the apron at Marham became a parade of honor, with guards of honor from USAF and RAF personnel, the khaki and the blue. Watched by IR correspondent Charles Gardner.
And here comes the first B-29 coming in to land now. It's coming down majestically towards the runway. It's been orbiting for some time so that it can land in front of the Secretary of State for Air, Mr. Arthur Henderson, who's on the saluting base, along with General Johnson, who commands the 3rd Air Division, and Sir Hugh Pugh Lloyd, who commands Bomber Command. And now the B-29 is down. It has landed, taxiing along now, and soon it will be coming up to the saluting base and the parade ground here for the ceremonial handing over.
Britain's Secretary of State for Air, Mr. Henderson, formally accepted the B-29s on behalf of the British government, and it remained for General Leon W. Johnson, commanding general of the American 3rd Air Division, to state in simple directness just why those B-29s, and others to follow them, now bear the roundels of the Royal Air Force.
Unfortunately, these bombers arriving today are necessary. They are assembled to serve notice that we are determined to continue our way of life the way we like. You know, and I know, they will never strike out. They will only strike back. We will not be weak and die. We will be strong and live.
From tons of bombers to tons of toys. And just one more acknowledgement from us of an overwhelming generosity. 50 tons of toys have just reached this country from the United States. And they're a first consignment, because the American Legion has collected from American children no fewer than 5 million gift toys for the less lucky youngsters of Britain's downtown lots. At Stepney in London's East End, the first presentations were made the other day by the daughter of your ambassador in London. And against a background of stars and stripes and Union Jacks, Charmin Douglas spoke for all those generous American children.
It gives me great pleasure to present this toy to you on behalf of the children of the United States. I have read some of the notes that came with these toys, and I have found one that expresses far better than anything I could say the sentiments of this child, which are probably the sentiments of all children. The note is from Bill Friesland, Penny Packer School, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It reads, "Dear friend, this is my best toy. I love it. I hope you do too."
And if you'd like the final note of appreciation, here's the voice of one London child, coaxed out of shyness by our reporter Douglas Willis.
Well, who isn't shy? Who's not shy? You're not shy, eh?
I'm not.
What do you think of all these lovely toys?
Well, I think they're lovely.
Mm-hmm. Which one are you going to have, do you know?
I don't know.
Which one would you like?
Doll.
A doll. Well, I hope you get your doll all right. Tell me, do you know where these toys come from?
America.
And there is the gratitude that perhaps matters most of all. That of the Britain of today and tomorrow. Which brings us to a postscript by London columnist Alan Melville. Alan?
This is Alan Melville speaking. The art of saying thank you, like the art of most good manners and most correct speech, is fading fast. Gratitude, when we bother to express it at all these days, is far too often perfunctory, conventional, and glib. We in this country have a ghastly monosyllabic abomination, tar, which, beginning as baby talk and perfectly justifiable when used as an infant who's been handed back the rattle it's chucked out of its pram, has now spread to the so-called adult classes and is freely employed as an expression of thanks for services rendered. Tar. Was there ever a nastier or more stupid noise, or a less gracious and more inadequate way of returning thanks? We poke fun occasionally at the Eskimos and the Red Indians for having sounds in their vocabularies like ugh or wuh. But neither of these is half as horrid as our own terrible tar. I really feel that if tar is all you can be bothered to say in return for some accepted favor, the favor can't in the first place have been worth accepting. That if we were really practical about it, tar, instead of being a so-called expression of thanks, would be regarded as a direct insult and the prelude to a duel at the first available dawn. The French, talking of duels, the French who, though you might not think so on occasions at, say, the customs shared at Cherbourg, are still the most polite people this side of the Atlantic, the French have a most excellent way of saying thank you. And that is by being pleasantly and charmingly argumentative about it. Merci bien, says the customer to the waiter on paying his check. A mere 5,000 francs, say, for a light snack in a cheap Paris restaurant. C'est moi qui vous remercie, says the waiter firmly in reply. It is I who thanks you. And whether the waiter means it or not, whether it's a genuine rejoinder or just a mechanically repeated phrase trotted out hundreds of times a day, at least it has a more gracious and pleasing ring about it than ta. Sir Robert Walpole once said that in most of mankind, gratitude is merely the secret hope of further favors. A cynicism which I trust you won't think applicable to our present expressions of thanks for what you and others did to help us when we needed help. We could, of course, have merely said ta, or whatever the verbose official diplomatic Whitehall equivalent of ta happens to be. Instead, the Lord Mayor's Thanksgiving Fund seems to me a pretty practical, however inadequate, way of returning thanks. At least there is a chance that some of you who helped to help us may yourselves be helped when you come over here. Gratitude in itself, of course, like patriotism, is not enough. At worst, it can be meaningless. At best, it may only be the possible start of real friendship. George Eliot, we seem to be full of quotations this week, George Eliot wrote, "Friendships begin with liking or gratitude, roots that can be pulled up." Well, it's to be hoped that a really practical expression of gratitude, such as the one inaugurated this week by the Lord Mayor's Fund, will result in friendship incapable of uprooting. Anyway, to twist the final quotation, for your relief, much thanks. Goodbye.
Ta, Alan. I mean, thank you very much, too. And it's goodbye from this edition of London Column, a radio digest produced by Stephen Eckard, presented by Peter Watson, and which came to you in the North American service of the BBC.
London Column, a transcribed program. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.